You are about to hear the first lecture of the course, How Success Thinks, presented by Rabbi Belinsky, Ariel Center 2016. For more information about our programs, please visit our website, arielcenter.org. First lecture.
Welcome, everyone. We are starting our course, How Success Thinks. And before we even begin talking about success, we have to answer one simple question. What is success? Any thoughts? How do you define success? What is success?
Achievements.
Success is achievements. Okay. But if you achieve something you are not happy about achieving?
Achievements that are higher than your initial goals.
Okay. Achievements that exceed your initial expectations. Okay, very good. Any other thoughts about what is success?
I think success is when society or group where you live saying you achieve something. It's not you, your feeling. It's how society acts.
This is a very interesting point, because first Arthur said success is achievements higher than your expectations. So obviously success is subjective, right? Something which could be success for me might not be success for another person. But so it's subjective, but subjective to you. Roman is saying completely something different. Success is subjective, but it's not subjective to you. It's subjective to the society, which means that if I really want to accomplish something, and people around think that I'm crazy for even attempting to do that, and I am achieving it, and I've accomplished what I wanted, if society around me says that it's a useless goal, then I probably cannot be considered successful. Any other thoughts?
Happiness.
Happiness is success. Okay, being satisfied with whatever you have, that's success. Okay, very good. Any other thoughts?
For everybody, it's a different feeling.
Right, it is, we already established it is successful. I mean, it is, sorry, we established it is subjective, you're right. So, we have here a Merriam-Webster's dictionary that defines success for us. We're going to read this definition. And then we're going to dedicate today's class to figuring out what success is in Jewish terms, how Torah defines success. And there's only one person in Torah who is called successful by God. And we're going to figure out who this is and why. And we're going to see how what Torah says jives with Merriam-Webster's dictionary and with our own thoughts here. Merriam-Webster's dictionary says that there are two definitions for word success. First one is achieving wealth, respect, or fame. Definition number two, correct or desired result of an attempt. Do you agree with those definitions?
Yeah.
More or less? Okay. Now, I want you to use one of the cards which were given to you. What you're going to write on this card is going to be only for you. Nobody is going to be asked to share what he or she writes. And if you protect it well enough, nobody's even going to peek to see what you're writing. You will take these cards with you, and it is only for you to look at the end of the class. Okay? So please write down one thing. How do you define for yourself? Many people said various definitions of success, but we all agree that success is subjective, right? So for you, for yourself, in your own personal life right now, at the stage which you are at right now, how would you define a successful day? What is for you a successful day right now? When you go to sleep in the evening, you sit back before you go to sleep and you think for yourself, oh, this was a successful day. I'm so happy with how this day was spent. Please write it down. I want you to write it down because it's going to be important. It's going to be important for you. It's an important exercise. Now take this card, put it back, and write down, and I want you to write down something else. I want you to write down for yourself, how do you define for yourself a successful life? What would be if when you are 119 years, 364 days old? Okay. And, you know, in Jewish tradition, we wish to live till 120. So you know that probably chances are you won't live for another 100 years. And you are looking back at your life. In your view right now, subjective to you and subjective to your current situation, how would you define a successful life? Now put these cards away and we're going to return to them sometime later. Okay? In your textbooks, for those that have them, you have an excerpt from an article in New York Times, July 14th, 2013. The author is Alina Tugend. A call for a movement to redefine the successful life. The article is citing a research that was commissioned by American Express and was completed in 2013 about people's attitude to what is considered to be success in their lives. And interestingly enough, the research compares these results with the results of similar researchers that have been done in 1971 and subsequently between 1971 and 2013. And there is a noticeable trend that people define success less and less in financial terms. They define success more and more as doing things you desire, enjoying yourself, and less at owning good things or earning a lot of money. Fewer people see owning an expensive car as a sign of success, while being satisfied and in control of your life have grown over the years. Amen. There's another text also in your textbooks from a book written by David Brooks. The book is called The Road to Character, New York Random House, 2015. And the book speaks about two types of virtues that people have. David Brooks calls it resume virtues and eulogy virtues. And David Brooks says that throughout our lives, more often than not, we focus on our resume virtues. Things we can put on our resume to be liked. Not necessarily a resume for a job, resume for a friendship, resume for a good company, resume for being popular, or something along those lines. And then there are times when we realize that once a person passes away, nobody gets up at the eulogy and say, he earned $5 million in his business deals. Not one person ever gets up at a eulogy and says how successful he was in whatever he was doing. It might be mentioned as a side point, but nobody's going to look at it as the main point of a person's achievements. People speak about one's character. People speak about his intrinsic virtues. People speak about if he was kind, if he was loyal, and so on and so forth. So, this is the two cards that you have used to write down a successful day, to define a successful day, and then defining successful life. If you look, I am venturing to say that probably your definition of a successful day was leaning towards a resume virtue. And successful life probably was leaning towards a eulogy virtue. These two concepts about resume virtue and eulogy virtue actually were discussed under different terms and without using these examples in Kabbalah, actually they're mentioned in the book of Zohar, written by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who was also one of the authors of Mishnah. He lived in the beginning of Common Era. We have something that is called an outer will, and something which is called in Kabbalah the inner will. Pnimiyut haratzon and chitzaniyut haratzon. The inner will, this is the desire we have that stems from our core. This is the desire we have for no other reason but just having this desire. Outer will is our superficial desire. These are desires we have in order to achieve something else. For example, I tell my friends that, oh, I want to go to work now. Well, do you really want to go to work now? You don't want to go to work now, I promise you. You are really not interested in work. You are interested in not being kicked out from your work, not being fired for coming late. That's why you want to go to work now. You are really not interested in traveling now and sitting in traffic to work. When you get to work, are you really interested in not being fired from your work? No, you're not interested in being fired from your work. You're interested in the money that you get at the end of your work week. Because this money, because you want the money, because so far, from what I understand, we still didn't reach communism yet, and we need money to live. We might soon, depending on tomorrow. So when you say, I want to go to work, you don't want to go to work. When you say, I want to keep my work and not be fired, you don't really want to keep your work and not be fired. When you say, I want money, you don't really want money either. If you have money, but you have nothing to buy with the money, you don't need the money. People need money to buy things with this money, either goods or services. So when you say, I want to go to work, you're not lying when you say, I want to go to work, but your desire to go to work is your outer will. It is outer will compared to your desire not to be fired. But your desire not to be fired is an outer will compared to your desire to earn money. But your desire to earn money also is an outer will compared to what? Compared to your desire to buy things. Now, why do you want to buy things? You want to buy things because chances are you are responsible for yourself and maybe for your family, and you want to be a responsible person, and you have family to take care of, or you have yourself to take care of. You and taking care of your family and your loved ones and living your life, whichever way you define it, is your inner will. Because if somebody will ask you, why do you want to take care of your children? Say, what do you mean, why? I mean, they're my children. That's I want to take care of them. There's no real answer. When you will ask a question like this, people will look at you funny. And they will do it rightfully so, because this is your inner will, not your outer will. So, any question of why that has an answer indicates that this is your outer will, not your inner will. So we have very few inner wills in our lives, maybe one, maybe a couple. But we have many, many, many outer wills. So now we are going to redefine success. Before we do that, we will look at a couple differences between inner will and outer will. Outer will is usually immediate and quantifiable. Why? Because if I want to get to work on time, I either get to work on time or I don't, and I could tell right away if I'm working on time or not. If I got my paycheck, it's either what I expected or it's less. And I could find out by just opening the envelope. Inner will is usually very abstract. It's very hard for people to pinpoint what their inner will is. I want to take care of my children. Well, what does it mean? And I can bet you every single person defines taking care of children differently. So, and even within person's own mind, it's very hard to pinpoint what it is. Outer will changes. When I wake up in the morning, my goal is to get to work on time. But when I'm at work, my goal is to get out of work on time, right? And then if I leave my job, if I fire my boss and start my own business, then I don't have a problem of getting to work on time anymore. So outer will keeps changing, but inner will stays the same for either your entire life or at least a big part of it. Outer will is a fleeting achievement. And this is a very important point. When we are running after items that are corresponding to our outer will, once we are achieving them, more often than not, we don't feel satisfied. There are exceptions, we're going to get to them. But very often, we don't feel satisfied. When I'm rushing to work to get to work on time, when I get to work on time, very few people say, oh, today's such a successful morning, I got to work on time. Often, outer will desires are not satisfying. Inner will desires are deeply satisfying. When you do something, if you want to take care of your children and you do something that pinpoints that you just now did something to take care of your children, you know, whatever that means for you, this will be deeply satisfying for you. Outer will depends on circumstances. It is not only subjective to you, it's subjective to what is going on right now around you. Inner will is steady. I said that most of the time, items of outer will are not satisfying. But sometimes they are. Do you know when are these items satisfying? My desires that correspond to my outer will are satisfying only if A, they are leading me to achieving a desire of my inner will, and B, I recognize it for being so. If I know that I am now going to work in order to provide for my family, and I hate my job and I don't like it, and I cannot stand my boss, and all of my coworkers are making me miserable. But let's imagine such a hypothetical. So if I have this terrible situation at my work, but I keep in my mind why my job is needed for me and for my family, then a day, a job like this will be deeply satisfying if I keep remembering why I'm doing it. Now, obviously, I would rather earn my living in a company which I appreciate, have a boss which is nice, and not dread coming to work every day. That's 100%. But even a day in a job which you hate could be satisfying if A, it is achieving your goal of your inner will, and B, you recognize it, because this is the hardest point. Very often, we make ourselves a plan and then we follow through this plan, but we forget in the meantime why are we doing it. This is why, by the way, in the army, they have these constant drills where they give all these prep talks to the soldiers, telling them over and over again why they're fighting, what they're fighting for, and why they're sacrificing their lives. Because war is hell. And if you forget why you're doing it, there's no way to pull through. And by the way, as a side note, today in America, many people speak about being happy at your work, doing what you love, and feeling satisfaction from whatever work you are doing at your job, you know, while you're working. Those of you that watched the video I put out a couple months ago about advice to university graduates is actually focusing on this very point. we are not focusing on why are we doing things in the first place. And this is why we are looking for immediate satisfaction from whatever we are doing, because we don't know why we're doing what we are doing. If we know why we are doing what we are doing, then it's going to be satisfying even if it's not enjoyable. But because we never train ourselves or teach our kids to focus on a goal and keep reminding yourself how whatever you're doing now is connecting you to your goal. And make sure that your goal is connected with your inner will. Make sure that this is where it comes from. This is why we're looking for immediate satisfaction. I can promise you, coal miners in West Virginia that were working there for generations never liked their job. It's hard for me to imagine that somebody would. And you know what? The phenomenon of a good job which you like in a clean, nice, air-conditioned office is an invention of 20th century. Before 20th century, 99% of the population probably hated their jobs. And yet they were happier people, and this video which I mentioned explains why. So now, we understand what success is according to Torah. Success according to Torah is life in which your outer will and your inner will are in line with each other. It is subjective to a person. Why? Because every person has different inner will. For somebody, it's to take care of children. For somebody, it's to take care of his parents. For somebody, it's to get a career. For somebody, it's to make a breakthrough in science. There are many different inner wills that people have. But if every item throughout my day is somehow connected to my inner will, and it is a step in achieving it, and I keep reminding myself, and I visualize how to step in achieving, then I have a successful day. If my entire life is consistent of days like this, then I have a successful life. Interestingly enough, we have a text here from a research that was done at West Point with Army cadets. And in your textbook, it is found in your appendix. It's not part of the class. And this text, here it's Amy Wisniewski and Barry Schwartz. The article is called Gray Matter, The Secret of Effective Motivation. Sunday Review, New York Times, July 6, 2014. This study was asking cadets who were entering West Point to say why they are there. 11,320 cadets were answering those questions. They were asking them anonymously, so there was no fear of consequences, but each one of them was given a number, which they kept with them, and throughout their career, they were answering same questions or different questions using this number. So when they were coming into the school at West Point, they were asked why they're here. Some of them said that they're here because once you serve in military, you get free college, and they want to have free college. Some of them said that they want to have military benefits afterwards because they want to have a certain lifestyle afterwards, and military allows them to do it. Some of them said that they are joining the military because they want to fight in the military, because they want to be soldiers. Because this is what they want to do. Many of them did it just because this is what they decided throughout their childhood that they wanted to do. Some of them did it because they come from families of military people. Some of, by the way, many people did it in response to terrorist attacks or to other tragedies that happened around the world. They wanted to be military people. Okay, this is the second category. Third category was responding with a combination of both motivations. They were saying, yes, I want to be a soldier, or I want to be in the military, and also I want to have the benefits that military offers afterwards. Free college or something like that. And then their study at West Point and their careers afterwards were tracked. Those who were stating that they are there to serve in military had, first of all, better scores in school, and second of all, they had better results once they were serving in the military. They were promoted faster, that they were much better servicemen. Those that said that they are there for this very purpose. Those that said that they are in the military for the benefits had lower grades in school and lower results while they were serving. And this is a very clear indication of comparison to your inner will and your outer will. For those that were there for the purpose of being in the military, for them it was their inner will. For those that were there for ulterior motives, this was their outer will. We do our outer will functions with less enthusiasm than our inner will functions, unless we keep working on ourselves and reminding ourselves how this very step serves our greater goal and how this outer will item is going to lead me to the inner will item. And even then, I'm not sure if the two could be comparable. But then there was a third group, if I remember, that gave mixed answers. That they were there partially because they wanted to serve in the military and partially because they wanted the benefits that the military offers. And do you know what is the most interesting part of this research? The most interesting result of this research is that this third group had results worse than the previous two. People who are not sure what their inner will is are lost. They don't know what they want. Their results are lower than any other group. So these are the people that were not successful because they didn't know. They weren't sure what is their inner will. And if you're not sure what is your inner will, there's no way for you to connect everything you do in your day to this inner will because you don't know what your inner will is. There's only one person in Torah who is called successful. And this is Joseph. Yeah. Torah calls him Ish Matzliach, a successful person. Wow. That's a pretty good title. Now, I want to ask you a question. I think Moshe Rabbeinu Moses was a quite achieved individual. First of all, he confronted the monarch of superpower of that world, of those times, Pharaoh. He led the entire nation free out of slavery. He received the Torah at Mount Sinai. That's a pretty good resume. If you ask me, I want to have 1/10 of that resume on my record. So Moses was very successful. Abraham was pretty successful too. Why is it that Yosef is the one Torah called successful? He actually had a very troubled life. He was sold by his brothers into slavery when he was 17 years old. And while he was living in his father's house before that, he was actually taunted and disliked by all of his brothers. He was the one who they all were disliking together. And then they've sold him into slavery. And then he ends up a slave. And then he is wrongfully accused in a crime and he's in jail. Later on, he becomes first minister of Pharaoh in Egypt. But that's later on. But his life was very difficult. Why is it that he's called successful? Because he is the person who throughout the entire 5 books of Moses had the most challenges to being focused on his inner will. And nonetheless, he prevailed. He was the one that had it most difficult to keep in mind what your real goal is and what are the steps to getting there and how each thing that I'm doing is leading me there. First of all, because his life was redirected a million times. First he was living in his father's house, then he's a slave, then he's in jail. He's all over the place. It's very hard to keep focus like this. And yet, whatever he was doing at every step of his life, he kept focus on. A successful life is a life that's where outer will serves the inner will. Where outer will never conflicts the inner will. Where outer will never makes us neglect the inner will. Where outer will is aligned with our inner will. And now, we have a very interesting verse from Tehillim, Psalms of David, which is written in synagogues very often on top of the ark, or sometimes in front of the podium where the chazan, the cantor, is standing. It became, in some respects, the motto of Judaism. This phrase is, Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. which is literally translated as imagine God in front of you at all times. Right? It seems to be a fairly simple message. Whenever you go about your life, imagine that God is in front of you. They especially write it in synagogues because when you pray, you have to imagine God right in front of you. You are praying, you are standing in front of Him. But then there is a deeper meaning to the first word in this verse, Shiviti. Shiviti means imagine, but what Shiviti in Hebrew is etymologically connected to the word hashva'a, which means equanimity, everything being equal. When I imagine God in front of me, everything what happens to me is being equal, which means I have my goal, my eyes are set on it, and all the things that are distracting me are simply not even taking place. I don't even notice them. They are completely irrelevant to me. Very often we have a trouble staying focused. You know, especially if you are doing something you don't particularly appreciate. It's hard to stay focused. Very often we have challenges to staying focused. We have people or circumstances that take our attention away from our goal. We have a political candidate who has a hard time being focused on his message. And those who don't like him purposely beat him. They want to distract him. And guess what? He falls for it. So instead of spending his time talking about what he wants to talk about, he ends up spending his time talking about what his opponents want him to talk about. So, how do you stay focused? We mentioned over here that one of the definitions of success is a life where outer will never makes us neglect the inner will, right? So whenever outer will makes us neglect the inner will, it means I have a focus, I have to go there. But then my outer will says, you know, here's an ice cream truck, let me go buy some ice cream. Or, you know, here's nice, my friends, you know, my friend posted something on Facebook which I need to look at. You know, there's something going on. So how do we achieve that? Torah tells us really, well, we could try to control ourselves. We could do that, it works. But Torah says, if we are really focused on our goal, then all these things won't even be an issue. Which means, if I get distracted, the problem is not with me being distracted. Me, all these baits that my outer will sends my way, these are symptoms. The problem is that I am not focused enough. What does it mean I'm not focused enough? I don't know how what I'm doing now helps my inner will. If I would have been reminded about it every day, every hour, every minute, my challenges with being distracted would be much less. Shiviti Hashem, Negdi Tamid, I set God before me, and therefore everything in my life is Shiviti equal. I'm free of the concerns that are distracting me. So, for a successful life, you need two things. First of all, identify things that matter. And second of all, ignore the things that don't matter. And this actually brings us to a very interesting point in our interpersonal relationships with others. Very often, what we are doing is dependent on the views and opinions of other people. And our society often, like Roman said, defines success by what everybody else says, by what the world says. And this is true. It's unfortunate, but it's true. So, therefore, if I have my own inner will, which I've defined for myself, I have my own inner will, and I am identifying the items that will help me reach there, and I know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And I'm identifying items which are making me neglect my inner will. That's actually something I've put some effort in explaining this to my children. When they understood it, like a light bulb went on their head. I was explaining to them, everything you do instead of something else. Okay? If you choose to do A, it might be good, might be bad, but A comes instead of B, C, E, and D. Every choice of yours, whatever you're doing now, means you're not doing a million other things. So you can't do everything, you do only one thing at one time. I mean, at least men, women, I don't know. So therefore, everything which is connected to my inner will is a distraction. And if it's a distraction, it means it comes instead of something which is connecting me to my inner will. So if what people think my inner will should be, or if people think what I should be doing now is affecting what I'm doing, that means it's a distraction. People who have identified their inner will and identified all the outer will components that lead them to it and keep reminding themselves how it does it and why it does it, those people are less dependent on others. Psychology explains that there is a difference between codependence and interdependence. Any marriage counselor is going to tell you that when a couple comes to him or her for counseling, very often, some even say most of the times, the problem is that they are interdependent. What does it mean? There is a saying of Reb Mendel of Kotsk. It's a Hasidic Rebbe who lived in town of Kotsk. He was known for he had a very sharp mind and very sharp tongue. There are books of his saying which are published. One of his sayings is, if I am I because you are you, and you are you because I am I, then I am not I and you are not you. But if you are you because you are you, and I am I because I am I, then I am I and you are you. What does it mean? If I am I, if I feel who I am because of you, then my I is not my real I. If you feel who you are because of me, then your you is not real you. But if I feel who I am only because of me, and you feel who you are only because of you, then you both are okay. People need each other's help. Everybody needs somebody else's help. There's no person who could survive in the world alone. We need others' help. We need others' practical help. We need others' compassion. We need others' emotions. We need others' words. We need others' smile. We need others' cheering up. We need all these things. But the question is this what makes me or breaks me? Is this what defines me, or just an added benefit? Everything what defines me should be within me. Everything what makes me live and survive should be within me. Everything what I get from outside, all the external factors, they need it. But they can only be an added benefit. So a married couple that lives like two sticks which are leaning on each other cannot survive for very long without falling down, because as soon as one stick is going to move, the other stick is also going to fall. But if there are two sticks which are next to each other, they might be leaning against each other, but they're standing next to each other. Then when one of them moves with the wind, the other one still stands. This is why not only having success the way we defined it is going to help each person in his practical life achieving what he wants, not only will it help him to feel accomplished, it will also help him in his interpersonal relationships. And this is why, by the way, you often hear that successful people attract other successful people. It is true. There's no magic to it. People say success attracts success. Some people think there's some metaphysical aura that is traveling with somebody, and when one successful person sees this aura, he is drawn to it, or maybe there's like a code word that successful people use between each other, that, you know, once you use this secret word, you know, they know who they should follow. There's no magic there. It's very simple. People who are not dependent on others are drawn to other people who are not dependent on others. Which means successful people are drawn to successful people. It happens on a subconscious level. It's not something that people even understand most of the time. But if a person has his own inner will defined, and his life is consistent with his inner will, and he is following his steps, and he keeps himself motivated by reminding himself what is he doing, how is he doing it, why is he doing it, then this person is emotionally independent on others. And emotionally independent people are attracted to other emotionally independent people. So this concludes our first class. Let's go over what we did today. Number one, we found a new definition of success. We chucked out Merriam-Webster dictionary, with all my apologies to the authors and publishers. We disagree with them. We believe that success is something deeper than what they have described. We spoke about inner and outer will. Inner will is something that is existing without any reason. There's no explanation to why I need it or why I want it. I just want it. I need it. And there's probably one or maybe a couple of such desires that each person has. Outer will are all desires that we have for something else. We need to identify our inner will, and we need to identify which outer will items are serving that purpose and which don't, which are not serving it. And we define success as a day or a year or a life in which outer will is consistent with inner will. So we need to A, identify it for ourselves, and B, keep reminding ourselves how they connected, how they are connected. We also saw that it's going to help us stay focused, because there are a lot of distractions, and once we know what our goal is and how our each step leads us to achieving it, it's going to help us not to be distracted by outer will items that are not allowing us to achieve what we want. By the way, it's a much deeper thought. The common saying, sticks and stone can break my bones, but the words will never hurt you. People often say it, you know, to the kids or whatever. It's actually probably not anymore, unfortunately, because, you know, we're very careful with what we say to each other. We tell our kids, just don't get distracted, do what you want, don't worry about what others say. It's more than that. Is that if I'm focused, I just don't have time or don't have headspace, don't have any emotional resources to look at what other people are doing or saying. And this leads us to emotional independency of others, or being codependent, not interdependent. In other words, I appreciate what others do for me. I need them, but I don't need them to survive. I need them to accomplish certain tasks. I appreciate what they do. Anyone else does to me, it's an added benefit, but it's not what makes me stay alive, and it's not what makes me who I am, and it's not what defines me. And that's what defines in Judaism a successful person. And this is why successful people are drawn to each other, because they appreciate other people who are not dependent on others. So this class, we defined what success is. The question that now has to be answered, okay, how do we get there? When I was in France, I walking around Paris, and my knowledge of French was not so good. I have to use French words to describe the level of my knowledge of French. And we want to get to Eiffel, to the Eiffel Tower. And we are in Paris, and we see it. But we can't get to it, because every street we take goes in circles, takes us around, and we are just wandering in circles for already half a day. We ask each person, where is Eiffel Tower? They're telling us, right there, so we know right there, but how do we get there? And you know what? Most of Frenchmen, Parisian, people who live in Paris have never been to Eiffel Tower. They have no clue how to get there. So nobody can help us. We are walking in circles. We know where it is, but we can't get there. So right now we are kind of in the same situation. We know what success is. The question is how to get there. We see the Eiffel Tower, which street leads to it. So this is what the next class is going to be dedicated to. Figuring out how do we get from point A to point B. Thank you very much.